Welcome to Good Odds, Startups from Maine, the podcast of Upstart Maine. I'm Jason Harkins, a co-founder of Scratchpad Accelerator and a professor of entrepreneurship at the University of Maine.
And I'm Lisa Liberatore. I also co-founded Scratchpad Accelerator as well as Covort with Jason, and I'm the founder of Lisa's Legit Burritos.
Upstart Maine is a coalition of entrepreneur support programs in the Bangor, Maine metro region. We're a small region of 150,000 people in eastern Maine, where a growing group of entrepreneurs is coming out of higher ed and industry.
In the last few episodes, we followed the different paths of entrepreneurs coming out of career, university, and hobby. All took calculated risk, but found ways to improve their odds of success.
We're going to shift in this series of episodes to talking about entrepreneurs who are in a critical period in their business called the Valley of Death. In our last episode, we talked with Chuck Carter of Eager Games about his experience building a company. In this episode, we will focus on the Valley of Death for a very specific group of startups. As Beth McKeon, director of Fluent, says, startups are speculations. The problem is that while most people in the startup world understand that startup building is different from business building, we haven't totally defined what the difference is. According to Dave McClure, a startup is a company that's confused about, one, what its product is, two, who its customers are, and three, how to make money. Today, we're going to talk with Spencer Wood, CEO of TipWhip, about what his experience as a startup is as it relates to the Valley of Death.
My name is Spencer Wood, and my business is called TipWhip. TipWhip is a fare-free ride-sharing service exclusively for college students. Every driver and every rider has to be a currently enrolled college student in order to use the app. What makes us different from Uber and Lyft is that we don't charge any fares or minimums. Our mission at TipWhip is to get every college student to their next destination safely, no matter how much money they have in their pockets.
Companies like TipWhip are characterized by three specific criteria. First is that they compete in industries with what we would call low barriers to entry, meaning that it's easy for new companies to enter. Second, they sell a product or service that can be created relatively quickly and delivered incrementally. And third, they could be small businesses if they were focused on a specific market, say one geographic space versus competing across the United States. But ultimately, they can compete on a national level.
And isn't technology amazing? This is so great that opportunities like Spencer and TipWhip are available. Unlike Chuck's, who had a very long, deep valley of death, Spencer has the opportunity, much like other technologies in his genre, to be able to go out there and to try something and to be able to monetize it with enough that you can keep going. And you have several valleys of death that you're going to experience before you really hit kind of that big national stage.
So now let's listen to how Spencer got TipWhip started and how he entered his first valley of death.
The way that TipWhip started was on a cold January night back in 2014. A friend of mine called me from a local bar asking for a ride home. He didn't have enough cash for a taxi, didn't have enough money in his account to cover an Uber or a Lyft ride. So I went over and picked him up. And when I dropped him off at his apartment, he actually threw the last $2 in cash he had through the window of my car. And I had the light bulb moment, as you could say. And from there, I had a good time. I helped somebody out, made some cash, and I went all into the idea. So I sold a bunch of the things that I had, longboard, skates, anything that I could really get some money for. We ended up buying a red Astro van, and we drove around campus, a couple of us teammates that I was playing football at the time, and we would jump out of the van and hand out these flyers that had TipWhip on it with a cell phone number that I had reactivated. And we had a launch date of, you know, like 2 weeks out or something like that. So we marketed hard for 2 weeks. And from there, on weekend number one, we ended up making about $250 cash, which was the most cash I'd ever had in my hand at that point. And that was satisfying enough that I decided to not look back and go all in on TipWhip.
So it's amazing how companies like this can start literally overnight, that all it takes is the decision or the mindset to start a business. And then the next thing you know, you have yourself a business. But what he doesn't realize at the time is that he has really just entered his first valley as he tries to identify how he can cover his overhead, pay for a van, move into the market with only the most primitive of what we would consider current ride-sharing technology.
And I think it goes back to Beth's example of what a startup is. It's a speculation. I mean, here is this guy that's selling stuff and doing things on a whim and is going to into a valley of death. And it's like, blaze of glory, here we go. And it's his mindset and it's his kind of, I'm going to do this. And he has a mission that is going to be driving him through all of these valleys of death as we hear more about where he's coming from.
Right. But he can develop a variety of technologies, and we're going to hear about those coming up that allow him to move from pen and paper to a website, to an application, to the next stage that will really allow him to start to scale this type of business.
When we launched TipWhip, it was actually during the first year of my master's degree at the University of Maine. And during that time, I was actually taking a grant writing class that caught my attention. I realized I had something that I wanted to apply that class and writing grants to, which was TipWhip. At that point, we were still doing the cell phone and the pen and paper. So I took advantage of that class and the teacher and wrote a grant and was able to get $5,000 to start the basic development of the mobile app, just the wireframing and the idea itself. 5 years later, we now have a mobile app and we've launched at schools all across the country.
So this type of startup has a technology valley, which we will work to figure out. But in order to understand how to do that, we got to look at the money. And that is a real challenge that is across every industry. Having owned several companies, that bootstrapping mentality is super important. And I think that it's great that Spencer looked around at the resources available and applied for grants and used that to kind of prove his model. So as he looks to the future, he is able to show people that he's had some wins and he's had customers and he's had outside people kind of validate and give him some money so that he can keep moving towards success and out of that valley of death for financing, which will then help to get him out of the valley of death of technology and get him to that next plateau where he really needs to be to then keep the cycle going.
A big part of the way TipWhip has expanded to different schools would be me driving. I've given thousands of rides and made thousands of dollars from driving myself, which allowed me to have a little bank flexibility to get to and from a couple of these places. And then really a big secret on how I was able to, you know, do what I needed to do, but also not kill the business was 0% credit cards. I ended up going through a lot of different credit card offers that would offer 0% and no balance or $0 balance transfers for 18 to sometimes 24 months. So I would put large tech projects on one of these credit cards that I wouldn't have to pay any interest on. I could slowly pay off over the course of 2 years. And that way I could just pay the minimum every month on those. And I knew I could cover the minimum on those sort of things just because of driving, never mind the 20 or 30% we were getting from the drivers. And then from there, I would just use the money from driving to actually fund the trips to go to these schools and to visit the students and to try to buy t-shirts and koozies and flyers and things like that. So once the big expenses were on a credit card, the other smaller expenses were all self-funded and business-funded projects.
For many of these scalable companies, as they decide to move to a larger scale, however, they need to move from bootstrapping to some sort of equity infusion. And it's really important to identify key initial investors, often called the friends and family round, that allows the entrepreneur to persist through a valley of death and get access to the funding to move to the next kind of cycle of profitability without needing to necessarily go to professional investors and yet have responsibility to people as they exchange cash now for equity in their company.
Early on as well, after I got my first $5,000 grant, my sister actually decided that she would invest $10,000 as well into the company to help us launch the mobile app, because surprisingly enough, I didn't realize how much a mobile app actually cost to develop and launch into their respective stores. So that was an awakening that $5,000 wouldn't do the trick. Luckily, my sister backed me for the first version of our mobile app, which tanked and was a complete failure, but it was a good learning lesson, especially early on. And as I was continually grinding through opportunities and competitions, accelerators, I was doing anything and everything I could get my hands on. I was actually on a TV show called Greenlight Maine, and one of the judges happened to be a guy by the name of Ed McCursey, who actually later on invested into TipWhip because he liked the idea. He had a son that was in college. He really saw the viability of the business, especially on other campuses. So after about a year of following me, it didn't happen immediately by any means, so it was a year of him checking in with me, he finally was comfortable and believed enough in the company and my progress that he actually invested some money as well. I've just been able to strategically raise money as I've learned what the priority raise needs to be going forward. Because I think I tried to raise like $1 million, you know, in the very early stages when I didn't even know what I would spend it on if I had it. So that's a whole another piece of it, is getting comfortable with knowing exactly how much you need for how long you need it to get to the next level.
I think what's so inspiring about Spencer is that he has this really big, lofty mission. And he's also able to recognize the sacrifices that are involved to get there. And that it's not an overnight success, right? That he recognizes and is willing to endure all of the unknowns and the gray that happens when you have something that you are so passionate about.
Yeah, there's a lot to be considered when we think about the mindset of the founder while they're in the midst of a valley of death. And in particular, we need to think about how do we build those mindsets that allow them to thrive in times where they can't look at the bottom line of the company and say, oh, I'm a success. You know, how do they consider a risk orientation or the work that they do versus the assets that they accumulate and evaluate the worth of their time and effort there?
A startup founder to me, especially in my space, which would be mobile technology, you got to be very risk oriented. You definitely have to be ready to take risks and put it all out there. I thought, you know, giving free rides to college students would be an instant success. Figured overnight that it would blow up and we'd be everywhere. Why wouldn't it be? So you got to be able to deal with the reality and the surprises that come with your growth and your learning. I think a lot of the times everybody expects the best, but is awoken by the truth. So I've always had to be comfortable with not having any assets or things physical to touch with the time and money and energy that I've put in, which for a lot of people is what they work for, something physical they can touch, something that they can call an asset, something that they can show people. Technology is very difficult. It's just something on your phone that you can pull up and use. So I had to get comfortable with the fact of if TipWhip doesn't work and I've put all this money and time in, that there's nothing to really sell. You know, it's just, that's it.
One of the things that we understand a lot about what these entrepreneurs are going through is that they incur a lot of what we would call opportunity cost, which is they choose to do one thing, but by doing that, they forego doing other things. And we hear stories frequently about how Silicon Valley entrepreneurs might live 10 to a house in order to build a startup. But it's not just in Silicon Valley. It's entrepreneurs who are building startups of all different stripes and sizes. And that opportunity cost is very real. It incurs for the entrepreneur both professional opportunity costs in that they don't go do something else for their career, but also personal opportunity costs that force them to give up things in their lives outside of the company.
I have endured a lot. I've lived in places that I generally wouldn't want to or decide to live. I've lived on a air mattress for 10 months. I've lived in a room with no windows, nothing. I gave up family vacations, gave up time with friends. I mean, Tip Whip is mainly busy on the weekend. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I was, 22 years old, going hard till 3 a.m. pretty much every single weekend. So I gave up a lot of that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's when you pick somebody up that's appreciative of your business and your service and they tell you about it and they may not even know who you actually are and they're still talking up the business and being appreciative of the service, then that's what kept me coming back every single weekend.
What I think is so great about Spencer is his mission is so unbelievably core to him. It is everything that he does. And he has managed to surround himself with other people that inspire him and that make him want to continue and validate his mission. So the drivers, the users of his service, everyone that is around him is saying, keep going. And he takes that and he uses it to fuel him through these valleys of death. When he doesn't know where he's getting his next paycheck or how he's going to keep the business running, he is surrounded by people that believe in him and he believes in himself, which is absolutely amazing. And it's really exciting to see that he has achieved success, right? And that success is really in the eyes of the founder.
Success to me is a combination of being personally satisfied with what I've built. It's being stable, both, everybody wants to say financially. I mean, obviously I want to make millions of dollars one day. That'd be amazing, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing, but it's not why I do what I do. If I was here to only make millions of dollars, then I'd be charging kids $5 a ride minimum every single time, but I haven't done that. Money hasn't been the number one factor, but it's obviously great, but I love helping people. Like I said, I like hearing people appreciate a service. I like hearing the stories of people using the service and getting out of otherwise bad situations, hearing about kids making more money, not having to get another, waitressing job because they can drive once or twice a week with Tip Whip and make the money they need. So I think it just, you got to really love what you do and realize that it's going to be a 10-year commitment before you really lift your head up and see some of the successes that we all dream of, which would obviously be, publicity and cash. But until then, I'm pretty satisfied with helping people and building something and learning skills that most other people don't have.
I think one of the keys for helping an entrepreneur to be successful is to look around at the resources that are available for you. Before I started my first business, I went and took advantage. I went and found the free resources and I met with the business counselors and I got that advice and I got that guidance. Because the biggest thing that you can do is recognize you don't have all the answers and to go out and find them and to surround yourself with people that can give you the resources and can give you the knowledge so that you can continue to keep crafting your idea and to keep building out that business that you see as a final product, but you don't understand the incremental steps.
And we're going to hear Spencer talk a little bit about what it is that the early part of his journey was to take advantage of some of the resources that exist in the Bangor region.
I graduated with degrees in communications, family relations, child development, and peace and reconciliation studies during my undergrad. I wasn't a math person, wasn't a scientist, wasn't really a writer, and everything else after that was pretty much up for grabs. So I just migrated towards having, you know, more degrees than less and just having one. So I double majored and I minored. And what that taught me was a lot of the public speaking and the communication skills, but I was missing the business piece. You can only watch Shark Tank so many times before you know, don't really understand what's going on with the financial pieces and stuff like that. So I knew I had to develop some new skills, which got me towards the university's Innovation Center, which was a free place on campus that I could have my own desk, I could have my own space, I could ask questions to people. And I really took refuge in that spot and considered it to be, you know, kind of like my new field of play instead of football. Every time I'd go in there, I'd kind of turn the hat backwards and decide that, like, if I'm in here, I'm working. And I was always in there working and trying new ideas and working with other kids, which then led me into some of these other outside the university programs, such as Top Gun, that one of the professors in the Innovation Center led me to.
So as Spencer comes out of these initial opportunities to learn and develop himself as an entrepreneur, he gets the opportunity to both recognize the value of cohorts, which we see generally that cohorts play a huge role in terms of long-term success, but also gets the opportunity to take advantage of some programs like the program that Lisa and I run, Scratchpad Accelerator, which is oriented very specifically at these scalable entrepreneurs and allows him to build not just his foundational business skills, but actually turn TipWhip into a business instead of a product that is TipWhip, the ride-sharing app. And he's able to really maximize the value of his time in that program to leverage it forward to help him move into that and through that next valley of death.
When I started these business programs like Top Gun, what I didn't realize was the people I was going to meet within the classes would be more important than the actual class itself. After getting involved in a few of these programs, you start seeing the same faces, the same people. You start being able to hear their updates, understand what they're struggling on, and, you know, be able to relate to it. And sure enough, once you get your little cohort of entrepreneurs that you communicate with, you know, good programs and funding organizations kind of appear through other people. So I was lucky enough that a couple of the people I was friends with introduced me to an opportunity that was called Scratchpad, which was an accelerator program in the greater Bangor area that was offering $25,000 to select businesses that they essentially chose through this application process. And obviously, again, seeing the opportunity, I had to apply. Had to mention a couple of the people that I had been, you know, working with at that time. And lo and behold, after a lengthy application and a 3-ring binder, I was accepted into that, luckily. And that's really where everything for TipWhip kind of changed, because it gave us the opportunity to develop the business, not just a mobile app, not just the technology, but it gave me time to develop as a founder.
I think it's great that you go and you have the opportunity to learn from other professionals, but there is a lot of value, having been an employer, with asking my employees and asking my customers directly. You have a direct line to figure out what is actually happening in your business, not on your business. And I think Spencer has a really great place to talk about this.
The development that I've personally undergone as a founder has been more around listening to my clients and the people that work for me, simply because those are the people on the front lines of my business, and they're the ones relaying the message of what's going on, what's wrong, what needs to change. And in the beginning, I was pretty resilient. I thought that I knew best, that it was my idea, that it was my thing, and, you know, people don't really know what they're talking about. This is the best way to do it. And that didn't work so hot. So once I kind of got rid of the ego and started actually listening, the app started to develop at a much faster pace.
So in addition to listening to others and learning from others, there's a lot of systems building that happens as organizations move through their cycles of development. And building those systems internally means building a real process for identifying the key people that are going to allow you to develop and deliver your product or service at scale. And there's a lot that Spencer experiences, given the nature of his business, about how he can bring on board a new driver that will allow him to serve more and more customers over time, and the way that that changes as he moves from cell phone and paper and pencil into an app.
When I first started TipWhip, it was myself, a couple of my friends and roommates driving. So I knew everybody for probably the first year almost. You know, anybody that wanted to drive would have to come speak to me personally. We'd have to talk about the weekend and stuff like that. So it was a really close group of my friends that originally became my first drivers. From there, when demand started to get bigger and we were getting the mobile app on the to go live, we began taking on kids that I had never met before, never talked to, never seen. So it now progressed into an application rather than call Spencer and ask if you can drive tonight. So we had to start getting serious about actually vetting people and creating the process to onboard drivers safely. So we originally had like a 25-page paper application for kids to sign up to drive with TipWhip. We'd meet at a coffee shop, sit down, I'd pull this book of an application out, we'd go through it, kids would sign their life away 13 times in 12 different places, and away you would go. Once the mobile app came out, I wasn't even having to meet people. So it was me having to be okay with not even having the ability to micromanage my drivers, and me being comfortable being somebody that they actually don't really have a face or a name to. And that's been something that I have tried to do a lot better in the past here, is putting a face and name on the company so that kids feel a part of this business and that they're valuable and that they actually have a voice in what's going on and how it's being built.
Spencer really represents a whole class of entrepreneurs who go through this process of moving through a variety of valleys related to their technical development and their financial development and their internal systems development. And what we know and can learn from these entrepreneurs is that in the process of moving through valley after valley after valley and developing the business incrementally, we give an opportunity to the entrepreneurs to really become bigger and better without having to hit a home run the first time they come up to the plate. And it gives us the opportunity to learn about what it takes to go about being successful starting in a small market, whether it's Bangor, Maine, or Boise, Idaho, and moving into progressively larger markets to serve bigger and bigger populations. And that is a really exciting proposition for entrepreneurs all over the world.
Yeah, there's always a valley of death, no matter if it's a five-year-long process to launch a mobile app or if it's one business and partnership decision that you have to make to stay afloat. It's been very educational for me to go through the investment and the raising the way that I have. When it went from using family and friends, to writing a grant, to getting into an accelerator program, to getting my first equity investor, to receiving sponsorship money from, you know, 20 different businesses across the state, all the way to a partnership with the largest bank in the state of Maine. It's been a very slow, consistent growth, you could say. Everybody wants, you know, $500,000 yesterday when it comes to raising money for your business. But the way I have developed, it seems like everything has happened at the right pace at the right time. And I've been able to be in those moments and recognize those opportunities.
When I think about Spencer and his business, he is using technology to solve a very real problem. And he is doing that in such a way that he's creating a movement among people, and he is changing a culture, which again, when we go back to this valley of death, validates him. He is seeing change. He is seeing life get better. He is seeing what he wants out of his business, even though he hasn't seen that $500,000 or million yet. And I think that that is the most amazing part about this kind of entrepreneur and this type of technology and incremental growth, is that you're able to keep going and you're able to get that energy to keep fighting the battle because you were actually seeing changes in people's lives and in the community around you.
I realized we had changed our community and outgrown the original idea that I had. Was when I was giving a ride one night, the riders didn't know who I was, but I asked them, you know, how the app was, how the experience was, and this girl replied, you know, it was great, and she had no idea how her sister got around campus when she was at the University of Maine before TipWhip. And at that point, I realized that we had changed the university community to be safer, to have more options, to be more comfortable and affordable. And, you know, I reflected on her saying that, and I was like, a lot of kids drank and drove when we were in school because we didn't have the numerous options that kids have now. And for her to ask, you know, how did kids get around campus before TipWhip was here, was like a pretty cool moment for me to realize that we're engraved into the community at that school.
So as we said at the beginning of the episode, TipWhip represents a specific type of business that experiences these kind of incremental valleys of death, where they're able to move through periods of losing money into profitability, only to meet the next valley head on. As we acknowledged in our last episode, all companies incur some sort of valley of death, and it's an important topic and one that we're exploring in this trio of episodes. Find out more about Spencer and TipWhip at www.tipwhip.com. Thanks for listening to Good Odds Startups from Maine. Our next podcast will feature another innovation-driven entrepreneur who is working toward commercial success and through the Valley of Death. Meanwhile, learn more about Upstart Maine and our coalition of entrepreneurial support programs here in the Bangor, Maine region at www.upstartmaine.org. Coalition programs include incubators, accelerators, pitch and networking programs, co-working space, internship opportunities, and startup business education and lending. Together, we're building a community that fuels entrepreneurship. Let us know how we can help you pursue your dreams as an entrepreneur. This podcast was produced by Nestcom Productions at Husson University. Jordan Verge is our audio engineer. This is Jason Harkins.
And I'm Lisa Liberatore.
For Upstart Maine.